Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, August 5th, 2017, welcome to The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I am your host, Rich Fan, and I'm here to dive in with you. As always, the number is 515-605-9345. That is 515-605-9345. And if you're so inclined, you can always hit us up on the email tip, pwtdive@gmail.com. I'm really excited about today. This is part one of our two-part dive this weekend. We're going to be talking about representation in wrestling and the importance therein. Tonight, starting with WWE Hall of Famer, a wrestling legend, and someone who I think, honestly, is error-proof, and that's the Big Cat Ernie Ladd. Additionally, this weekend, later on, you're going to have released my interview with Darius Lockhart, the Revolutionary, a pro wrestler based out of North Carolina that is very young. He's at 20 years old, but he's already done an internship in Europe. He's already learned from some of the best in wrestling, like George South, Cedric Alexander, Caprice Coleman, and a host of others. And I had a delightful hour. It went by like it was nothing. Talking about his background, how he balanced school with becoming a pro wrestler, how a senior project in high school turned into a career and a life's passion, and how he's not going into professional wrestling with a blind eye to some of the racial and socioeconomical issues that go into the gimmicks that we see day to day. And so before we get started and before I bring on my co-host, who I'm really excited to bring in and you guys get to chat with, this will be one of his first appearances, but not obviously the last. I want to talk about some dives and some of the ponderings of last week. As you know, we talked about Pop Progress, how much I love the organization, and I got a number of emails. In particular, I got some emails and some tweets about if I could do more, and I'm going to be happy to do more. With Progress, there is so much, and with any of these subjects, there's so much. I don't want to think an hour is going to encompass all of it. So we're going to revisit Progress. We're going to revisit some big shows, hopefully in and around the time they're here in the United States. We're going to be doing a SummerSlam show that weekend, and I'll try to sneak in some Progress chat as well. And I'm going to try to get guests. As I just said, I interviewed Darius Lockhart. That's my first pro wrestler I've interviewed professionally here for The Torch. And I'm eager to bring some more talented people and their stories to you guys. And I think hopefully in a way that most people wouldn't. We're not going to talk about backstage politics. We're going to talk about them as a person, how they feel they represent their character, and how they represent what they're trying to bring out there as far as education-wise. Let's talk a little bit about the Big Cat. Ernie Ladd was an AFL All-Star, 6'9", 315. His opponents would say he would block out the sun. This dude was a bad dude. In 63, he won the AFL title, and he went to four AFL championships in 5 years with the Chargers, which, as a Bills fan, I remember winning two of them, those 64, 65. Those are the yay, go Bills celebrations we have, and that's all we got so far besides the four things that happened in the 90s I don't like to think about. But when I bring my co-host on, we're going to talk about one of the seminal moments in Ernie's career, which was the 65 All-Star boycott in New Orleans. Like I said, I'm going to talk about that with my co-host in a minute, but I do want to talk about the fact that imagine one of your favorite football players, and in the offseason, like we talked, for instance, about D'Angelo Williams in TNA. Imagine D'Angelo in the heyday of his career when he was with the Panthers in the offseason wrestled and made more money wrestling than he did playing football, to the point where when injuries started to pile up, he could make near $100,000 a year as a pro wrestler, as a main event, as a guy that can bounce from town to town, as opposed to like the $25,000-$30,000 he was making as a football player. So that's the story of Ernie Ladd. He came in because he was a moneymaker. From the onset, this dude was a master of promos, as myself and my co-host will talk about. Friend of good old JR. We'll talk about his ring work. We'll talk about his big matches. Over the next hour, we're going to give you a lot of information. And since I would be remiss without delaying it any further. I want to bring on my co-host. He is the host of the Undisputed Pod, UD Pod, on the MTR Network, Daniel Palmer, a.k.a. D-Palm. D-Palm, how are you this evening?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for the intro. It's actually the Unanimous Decision Podcast.
Oh, my God. I screwed that up already. See, this is my first co-host, and I'm already messing things up. So hopefully you can help me fly right today.
We'll be fine. We'll call it on the ring. We'll see how it goes.
Awesome. So let's talk about him. Big Cat, I sent you the notes that 65 AFL football strike. They go to New Orleans. They have to deal with, first of all the black players not being able to get cabs from the airport, which we see shades of now with the LA Chargers and their players trying to get apartments. And Big Cat goes to a club, and he hears James Brown in the club, and the bouncer pulls a gun on him because he says blacks aren't allowed. A mere month or months after the Civil Rights Act's been enacted. What were your thoughts on that and the fact that Ernie really didn't care the dude had a gun on him?
Well, it's kind of the quintessential Ernie Ladd story, right? It's the one that you're like, oh, that I don't understand this guy. You tell that story, then immediately you do. It's reflected in all facets of his life, from on the gridiron to in the ring work. And what I really liked, what I think is really interesting about his story is this wasn't the first time an All-Star Game used to send the message. In 64, the NBA All-Star Game, that was the All-Star Game famously known as the All-Star Game that almost didn't happen. But that was over relations with pay and whatnot. This is the first time I think that in mass you saw the voices of athletes stepping forward and saying, not only will we be heard, but we will be – this isn't going to end because you're mad at us. This ends when you – come to resolution to help or to acquiesce to our demands. This is not going to be a situation where we're going to be shamed or frightened out of standing up for what we believe in.
Yeah. I mean, in the shadow of what we're seeing now with Colin Kaepernick and a lot of players standing up for police brutality issues and issues with representation in government and laws, having a bunch of AFL players say, we're not playing in New Orleans, and having the mayor at the time just come out and say the Negro players should roll with the punches, and it's a grievous injury that's been inflicted on the city of New Orleans when they decided to move it to Houston. You could take that quote and put it in 2017, and you could not bat an eye.
Well, and that's one of the wild things is that progress and change is all incremental, and we understand that, but it, as you look at these quotes and you see how they fit, 60 years later, And you can be, like you said, unflinching in the same situation. Only now it's a louder, only now it's harder to shame people. I think in the past that was kind of the goal of the nonviolent resistance in the civil rights movement led by Martin Luther King, was if we show them how badly they're treating us without us retaliating, they have to be shamed into changing. The difference now is there's more eyes, and the more eyes has more entrenchment and kind of people not wanting to move, which is a commentary on the times, but it's disheartening to see, to say the least.
Yeah, and it makes perfect sense that when Ernie's injury started to mount up, he would want to transition into professional wrestling. I mean, first he had a couple of things on the West Coast where he would show up at a workout representing the Chargers and wrestling guys like Mil Máscaras and representing, you know, oh, hey, this guy never was a, you know, this guy was never an NXT type person. It was never, let's go take from the ground up. From the day he set foot in a wrestling ring, he was a main eventer or near the top of the card. And it was very awesome to me to look into and watch the history of this guy unfold. Personally, I didn't know that much about Ernie other than the little vignettes that showed, you know, African-American History Month when Vince wanted to show those vignettes. Yeah, every third week, Ernie Ladd. It comes around like clockwork. And then, you know, if we're lucky enough, we might get the Rosa Parks MLK 2 shot, since Vince is, you know, an admirer of MLK for some reason, somehow. He still thinks that's accurate, but, you know, I'm sure we'll get to that as we talk about him, Ernie being era-proof. Because I'm going to jump around a little bit, but one of the first videos that's in that playlist I sent out is him interviewing with Vince McMahon and WWF at the time and looking Vince McMahon in the eye and saying, I know you wish, Mr. TV announcer, you were about 40 pounds heavier so you could do something about me, but you can't. And I my eyes fell out of their head when I saw that promo, because Ernie was not afraid to talk about race, both in a subtle way, as he did with Vince there, but then later on, in a very, I think, caustic way, which you'd probably most likely never see in 2017.
No, never in 2017. At least not on the biggest stages, because for all the reasons we all know, public betrayed and whatnot. But I think, and I hope, I'm excited to hear the other half of this deep dive, because that interview is really compelling to me, because you're right. To do it in 2017 is, the gimmick looks different, but you can still do the gimmick. And we've seen flashes of it through the years of flashes of that gimmick or permutations of it, but watching Ernie Ladd do it in the time period on tape is something special. I personally knew the broad strokes of Ernie's career. I knew a bit more than, like you said, just the vignettes, but I'd never really taken the time. I think I'd seen maybe one or two matches, but sitting with the vignettes and going through the playlist and watching him talk and watching how he carried himself, it's interesting to see just how airproof it was, not just the substance of his character, but the style of his promo, the style of his in-ring work. It's the chicken-esque heel who, when the fire really does get lit, can tear it on, turn it on and whip you real bad. It's what Kevin Owens does.
Yeah, absolutely.
The not wanting to start the match, it's the hanging out outside. But when the going gets tough, you've got a problem trying to handle this man.
And it's funny to me because he's 6'9 and 300 plus pounds. So to see him taking a powder, to see him cowering and running away from Gordon Solie, when Gordon Solie's like, you know, he's bragging, I'm the best athlete you guys will ever see. I can jump off the top rope. He's like, oh, wait a minute. If you're the only person who can do that, Ernie, last week when Gino Hernandez got jumped for his title, there was a man who went off the top rope. He's like, whoa, I went off the second rope. I see what you're trying to do. I gotta go. And that sort of thing to me was just hilarious. Now, like we said, there's some things, and we'll get to it. Like, for instance, you know, for those of you who, surprise, surprise, like I said, this deep dive this weekend is a lot about representation. And I think I take my job seriously here at The Torch as one of the two African-American contributors that are on staff. And so bringing on Daniel and talking about Ernie, there's a lot to unpack when Ernie says things like, you need to go back to Africa, Bobo Brazil. And when talking about Rufus, your kind and my kind never got along. And it's been that way since the beginning of time, like going into the idea of light skin versus dark skin, going straight to the offensive, go back to Africa. Like, he knew how to walk that line, because to African-American listeners, to African-American fans, you got the messaging. And for the white fans or the non-African-American fans in the stands, you weren't offended, nor were you intimidated. So you'd be drawn into the feud as well.
Yeah, he really was. It was such a multifaceted character that he was able to bring to the table. And I think that's what really stands out watching some of this footage, that despite the trappings of tongue-in-cheek version of Southpaw Regional, we're able to see that this guy was able to bring nuance to that portrayal. It worked on multiple levels, and it was in almost shades of, yeah, he's a heel in America, but in certain territories he's working babyface. It's a little Bret Hart 96.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at Ernie's early history and he's going through the territories and he's wrestling, one of the first things when talking to Bruce Mitchell about this, and I know usually on your show you would hit the self-promotion bell.
I had to stop myself just now.
But one of the things he mentioned to me was that Ernie was similar to Kevin Nash. And I think even the Kevin Nash illusion doesn't do him justice, because this dude's doing drop kicks at 6'9". He's going off the top rope at 6'9". He cited the oft-used football injury as an excuse to have the loaded thumb. And he did it in a way where you're like, that's the quintessential heel. It's like, you're already 6'9", 315. You're already super hyper-athletic. You don't need this, but you still have this extra thing.
But I think that little bit of character work really made him almost the indispensable heel, because you're right. He is the big man. He can come into your territory. He can be your monster. But guess what? He can come into your territory and be the champion who's scared to actually lock up with anyone. He was smart enough and deft enough on the mic to be able to walk the line between those supersonas and all the ones in between because of his just ability on the microphone and his presence of physically wise.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I can't agree with that more. And I definitely want to talk about one of the most seminal spots and angles we viewed on the playlist, which was involving him and Wahoo McDaniel. And I'm going to be sure to do that when we come back to the deep dive with Rich Fan and D-Palm.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
All right, we're back on the deep dive with Rich Fan and D-Palm. We're here talking to you about the Big Cat Ernie Ladd, his history, his awesomeness, and how he's error-proof. And before the break, I alluded to the fact that Ernie was a guy that had a lot of angles, but one of my most favorite angles that I watched, and one of the more controversial angles was his feud with Wahoo McDaniel. And for those of you who aren't aware, Chief Wahoo McDaniel was as Native American as I am Chinese, which is zero. He was a dude, if I remember correctly, from, I want to say, Minnesota. And he had the Stage B 50s and 60s Hollywood Native American gimmick where he'd come out with the headdress, he'd come out with the outfit, he'd do the war dance. But, you know, that's it. That was really him. Cultural appropriation on 100. And he had a match, and he wanted to challenge Ernie. He got the drop on Ernie, beat the holy heck out of him, knocked him out. Ernie came too, but when you watch this video, and like I said, it's on the YouTube video playlist I sent out to you guys, and I'll send it out again. It'll be in the notes of this episode. You can see the moment when Ernie comes too while he's celebrating, and Ernie looks up, and he peeks, and the fans start screaming, he's awake, and he turns around, and Ernie's out. And then he peeks again, and then Ernie finally gets up, and he whoops the tar out of Chief J. Strongbow, and afterward sticks the feathers down his throat. And it was great because that's the preamble for what we talked about earlier, where he was talking about, I'm going to send Bobo back to Africa, and I'm going to say, Rufus, you know, your kind and my kind never got along. But then he looked and said, Chief J. Strongbow, I'm going to pluck them feathers. I'm going to slap you in public. I'm going to slap you in the presence of your mother. And these sorts, I was laughing my head off because he was so over the top, but it was so believable because of his arrogance. What about you, Palm? What did you think about that?
I thought it was really interesting, particularly if you look era-wise, because one thing that this kind of got me to do, because like you, I love to overthink things. I started to look around the era and see how frequent was it you saw a black heel in the 70s. And what really stuck out to me was that, you're right, he did all these outlandish, over-the-top things, but he was one of the only black characters to do it. And to have that confidence to say, I'm not afraid of reprisal. I know what the social climate's like, but I'm going to go in there and make them hate me. And he did it.
Yeah, and he wasn't. He not only was he not afraid of the fan reaction, but I think because of his size, people were so afraid of him that he didn't have to worry about some of the stories, at least from the fans. We're going to get to in a little bit the story of when Ernie Ladd had to tune up the Briscoe Brothers repair shop. But in terms of the fans, you have this 6'9 guy. I mean, football players said he blocked out the sun. So for a regular fan that's sitting in the middle of Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, or someone in the middle of Missouri, you're going to see this guy and you're going to be like, holy crap, he's going to kill me. And then you want your avatar. You know, I'm going to talk about this in a few weeks when it comes to the Mayweather-McGregor fight. You want that white hope or that Native American hope. You want someone to put this black guy in his place because he really was. He had shadows of kind of Cassius Clay. He had some of that Muhammad Ali in him where he was so arrogant, but he backed it up that you couldn't but hate him more. And when you look at his title history, like I'm a big, you know, like, you know, with this show, I dive deep. I go crazy over these things. He teamed up with guys like Ole Anderson to win the NWA Junior Tag Team Championship. He won the NWA for the NWA Central States title with Bruiser Brody. A tag team with him and Bruiser Brody should never lose because I would be afraid one of them would murder me.
Yeah, who's the booker who says, "Hey, you're not going over tonight." What? Yeah, and actually, you guys got to decide between you who takes the fall.
Yeah, I mean, the guy is just so dynamic. He's good in the ring, good outside of the ring, and he was also somewhat unlike Bruiser, because Bruiser was known as a guy who could negotiate up until he got to the curtain that was trusted. You know, in March 1st, 1976, one of the biggest moments in his career, he challenged Bruno Sammartino, as he called him, for the WWF title at Madison Square Garden. The story goes, allegations were that he was a replacement for Stan Larry Hansen, who they couldn't trust to do the job. So he came in there, he did the job to Bruno, then came back and challenged Pedro Morales and Bob Backlund. And there's nothing funnier than watching the Bob Backlund promo before his match with Ernie, because babyface America's here. He's not going to jump into the racial stuff. He's the quintessential friend that says, "I don't get into politics." So when he's talking, it's like, Mr. Ladd, it's going to be a delightful challenge, and I look forward to a rousing match. And it's so different than the fiery Pedro Morales or the fiery Bruno, where he's talking about this guy coming in. Or, you know, even when Ernie talks about his match for Bruno, he wanted to warm up for the match, and he said he wanted to do it with, I want to say it was Bobo Brazil and Stan Stasiak. And the fans boo, and I want to get to one of those things that I love the most about Ernie, which was his ability to say, "Shut up," at the right time, where you knew the fans just – because he knew he was going to say something inflammatory, and then as soon as he says it, it's, "Shut up," and it's just, "Boo, we hate you." And I was just completely – I fell in love watching this. And then, of course, Andre the Dummy. Why don't you talk a little bit about that and the "I'll slap your face real good in the general public." I mean, this dude challenged Andre the Giant at the time where pre-Hulkamania he was still undefeated, quote unquote.
It was so enjoyable to watch because very rarely in this business you get to see a man who stands 6'9" and weighs 320 pounds play the chicken-ass heel.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what he did. That was the perfect – he played it to a T because he for all Andre's greatness, the mic work wasn't his home. Ernie it was. Ernie could carry a few on a mic by himself. And when it came to getting in the ring, it was that slow – the bell would ring and he wouldn't take off the jacket. And then Andre grabbed the ropes, tie up. So by the time we actually get to the heat, the meat of the match – the fans are frothing at the – they just want to see someone hit this guy.
Yeah.
He gets so much heat on Andre, who is the eighth one in the world. He's a walking heat magnet, but Ernie was able to amplify it. He was able to make the fans feel even stronger about Andre by being so reprehensible in facing him, by being so underhanded even at his size.
And I really liked how in his promos he went in and he set the stage for you by saying, "I'm not afraid of Andre the Dummy, but I also want you to know he claims he's undefeated, but I remember two battle royals I was in with him and I beat him." And when you hear him talk about it, it's especially in the age before the internet, you have to believe him. You have to say, "Oh, wow, there must have been this battle royal, or maybe he's lying. I don't know. I don't trust this guy." And it's the struggle. And nowadays, if they said the Intercontinental title was won in a tournament in Rio de Janeiro, we can all call BS on it and look on Google and look up the fact that someone was on, you know, Instagram or Twitter, and they're like, "There was no show here. I got pictures. This isn't even a lot. It's like a parking space for a buy right or something like that." So it was really cool that you had that era before the technology where you could get away with some of those sorts of things.
100%. It's because and I imagine it was way worse before then, but when I was growing up, I'm a WCW kid from way back, I would hear like, oh, you like that Benoit match? You should have seen him in the Super J Cup in 94. I'm like, wait, what's that? And this is the same thing as that. It buys into that underground. There's a reason why certain matches are still known as the dirt sheets. It's because this underground aspect of professional wrestling, this mystery around the promotion that you might not be following, that's always been part of the appeal. The fact that you're part of a larger world has always mattered to pro wrestling, and Ernie was able to tap into it. He was able to say, oh, it exists, but not only does it exist, you don't know what's really out there. Yeah, I beat him twice. What are you talking about? Of course I beat him twice. Well, of course he won't say I did. Why would he admit it?
Right. And it only added to his mystique to see him doing things like this. I mean, and one of the things I'd be remiss if we don't talk about is, of course, his matches in Florida with Dusty, where he beat Dusty for the, I want to say it was the Florida heavyweight, but I want to make sure I look at my notes. Yeah, it was the NWA Florida heavyweight title. He got stripped almost 2 weeks later because he took a powder out of the territory, which as he was getting older, Ernie learned the tricks, and he was like, you're not going to get me, buddy. I get my win, and I'm getting out of Dodge. It's amazing to me that Ernie Ladd had this potpourri of matches. We mentioned Pedro. We mentioned Bob Backlund. We're talking about Bruno, Andre, Dusty Rhodes, tagging with Ole, tagging with Bruiser. Wrestling Mil Máscaras in a 2 out of 3 falls match. Wrestling Inoki in a 2 out of 3 falls match. And going for 28 minutes and showing that Ernie could do the strong style. Like, my head exploded. I had nothing else to see when I saw this man doing this. And as strong as he was as a wrestler, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit with you about how good he was as a booker. Because that goes into another issue where we'll start taking phone calls and answering emails. The problematic nature of Ernie Ladd's friendship and the complete reliance upon him by Cowboy Bill Watts. We'll be back in a moment with the deep dive.
Hello, you people. I'm Pat McNeil. Every Sunday night, Greg Parks and I will bring you Wrestling Night in America here on PW Torch Livecast. We're on at 8 p.m. Eastern most weeks, or immediately following the night's pay-per-view. We'll talk Raw, SmackDown, NXT, GFW, New Japan, Ring of Honor, WWN, and all the latest wrestling news with your phone calls. So don't miss it. Be there.
All right, we're back here with the Deep Dive with Rich Fan and D-Palm. We're talking about Ernie Ladd, his history, his awesomeness, how he's era-proof, and answering your questions here. Make sure you call in, and if you've called in at 515-605-9345, hit 1 on your touch-tone phone, and if you have a rotary, I can't help you if you want to join our conversation. We have an email we're going to get to, but before I do, I want to talk with D-Palm about Ernie as the booker. So in addition to his phenomenal wrestling ability, as you've heard, all of this ties into being a man that knows how to run the business. And so with Bill Watts, one of the most problematic figures in the history of pro wrestling, a guy who this company, the Pro Wrestling Torch, was responsible in some ways for his firing from WCW. And for those of you who don't know the story, Wade did a Torch talk with, at the time, the booker, Mr. Watts. Watts had some questionable things to say about the rights for proprietors to serve and not serve people of color, people of certain sexual orientations, and from there, former Torch contributor, the super genius, a man from my area here in Pittsburgh, decided that he was going to present that to, of all people, Hank Aaron, who was one of the execs at TBS at the time, and that led to the ouster of Bill, because you can't have a person working for a publicly traded company, which Paul mentioned earlier, who espouses some of the questionable racial and sexual orientation things that Mr. Watts espoused in that interview, and be professionally responsible for people of color. That just was a non-starter. But when it came to booking, Bill Watts entrusted Ernie Ladd with bringing along Junkyard Dog to reach the success he did. And he did it in a way by having Ernie teach JYD how to deal with the crowd in a way racially that the white folk in the audience aren't going to be offended, and the black folk, as we said before, were going to be brought in. Palm, what'd you think about that, him as a booker?
I thought it was interesting because it's even though his career is atypical of professional wrestler, it's not exactly the old tried and true Eddie Guerrero work the world and make the big show story. It's someone who came from football, found success in the venue. It's a story that often, you know, just kind of talking to the more than casual fan, it's one that's kind of sneered at a little bit sometimes. But Ernie really had respect for and love for the business, and it was evidenced by not just his ability to, but his willingness to teach Junkyard Dog the business. And when you talk about, people talk about, oh, I'm going to go somewhere and learn. Most places, particularly wrestling, particularly territory day wrestling, you're viciously defensive of your spot. We teach you guy the ropes so he can take my spot and my money? Of course not. Brett Favre didn't help train Aaron Rodgers that first year because why would I train the guy who you brought to replace me? But Ernie Ladd's selflessness, like you said earlier, his dependability, the trust that people behind the curtain had for him, and his mind for the business and his eye for talent, they were able to say, hey, bring this guy along and turn Sylvester Ritter into JYD, one of the biggest draws in the area.
Yeah, and that's one of the questions that people always bring up. And I know Jim Ross, for instance, is a big proponent of the Cowboy. And one of the first things he says to defend him is his right-hand man and booker was a black man. His biggest star and champion in his territory was a black man. How could this guy, even if he was quote-unquote racist, how can you see him as anything but, and shoot, push it forward a couple of years, first black world champion on Bill Watts' watch. So how can you say this man had issues? And I always say, it isn't so much that Watts's racism or prejudice or bigotry was the issue. It was more so that he saw green before he saw color, and that was the only thing that kept that from becoming an issue. And a lot of promoters at the time, heck, a lot of promoters to this day, will still have an issue with seeing a black man in a role outside of whatever the – I always – you bring up the mention, too many gimmicks, you know. There was a conversation that someone said, you know, I was not there, so I can't say it with 100% veracity, but, you know, Mr. Oh, God, my his name escapes me right now. I shouldn't. Freebird, Michael Hayes, had allegedly talked to a wrestler of that was African-American about a gimmick he was doing. And he said, well, that's too many gimmicks because you already have a gimmick being black. And so when you have guys like that in a company like the WWE to this day, and you have guys like Ernie Ladd, who's in the fabric of the WWF and in the Mid-South territory, it's a tough thing for me to rectify as far as, okay, what was Cowboy? How did he and Ernie get along? Because Ernie coincided with the Cowboy not only in wrestling but in football. When Ernie was in football, Cowboy was a rookie, and so he kind of put him along and kind of gave him some tips. So these guys had a relationship from jump. And they were able to share things that maybe a traditional person of different races wouldn't be comfortable doing, as far as like usage of the N-word, how people treat them differently than perhaps Cowboy would. And I think some of that softened Cowboy in a way that he became the, which is still problematic, he became the Gran Torino version of Clint Eastwood instead of the real life version of Clint Eastwood, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, again, like you said, we weren't there. We don't know these people. And it'd be short-sighted and irresponsible to try to speak on their state of minds. But you can only kind of go off. People say, oh, it's not, you don't know them. Well, I can only know you by your words and your actions. And the words of the words, they couldn't stay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And before we get to, because we have an email, before we get to it, we talk about the fact that Ernie, he would walk around with a crown and call himself the King of Wrestling. He'd walk around with his old, which was my favorite look for him, his old Chargers team jacket with the 99 on it. And just,
yep,
like as Paul mentioned, take his time taking it off. And he'll even say, you know, when 99's coming for you, you got a problem. And, you know, speaking of problems, before we get to our emails and start answering some calls, Briscoe brothers had a problem. Ernie, after a three-hour drive from Jacksonville to Tampa, had a big issue after a show. It was, I want to say, I'm looking here. This is from Dutch Mantel, The World According to Dutch, and I'll put this in the notes as well. You can read the story. But basically, what happened was the Briscoe brothers got really annoyed the night before because they felt like Ernie showed them up in the match they're in. And he got screwed out of money that was promised to him, and they reneged on the deal because they didn't tape his match with, I want to say it was Rocky. It wasn't Rocky. High King Peter Maivia is Rocky. It was another wrestler. But anyway, this story is being told, and this is how I have to set the scene for you. Ernie the Big Cat Lad is sitting back listening to Aretha Franklin in an airplane with Dutch Mantel smoking a doobie and telling him about how the Briscoe brothers called him in the middle of the night and they were like, hey, we got to talk about this and we got to handle it. Let's just meet at midnight at this plot and we're going to talk about what happened and how we can get it done. Ernie gets up, goes to these guys. He's talking to Dutch. Dutch is like, don't do this. It's not going to end well. You guys have to calm down. He does it anyway. Gets to the place, realizes what time it was, talks to the Briscoes, and I mean that figuratively, not literally. The Briscoes are telling him you so-and-so and telling him this, all that, and out of his name. He's like, hey, before we finish talking, let me just put my stuff down and we can talk like men and handle this. Pulls out a tire iron, whips the crap out of both Briscoe brothers. Now, both Briscoes mean Jack and Jerry. Jack Briscoe, NWA World Champion, shooter of shooters, quality wrestler. Jerry's not far behind. And he handled both of them and left them at 2:30 in the morning bleeding on the sidewalk of a hospital. And Ernie's like, when someone called him up, it was Mike Graham called Dutch Mantel. Dutch called Ernie. He's like, did you do what you did, what they say you did? And Ernie's quote, it was, news travels fast in this town, don't it? And then Ernie commences to tell him what he had to do. And so afterward, Jack, you know, the thing about Ernie was he took it to be a lynching. He thought this was a lynching. And we got to take a step back and go to the 500-foot view as Dutch does. Jack and Jerry are Native American, which is like, it's just, this is a big old mess. This is a big old, like, in terms of the racial draft, he chose the wrong group and it just got ugly. So after this, no one's really talked about it again, but the lesson learned from this, and I'm going to quote directly from Dutch to anybody reading this. If you ever count a somewhat enraged Afro-American man who is around 7 feet tall, weighing 360 pounds, standing in front of you with a tire iron in his hand at 2 a.m. in the morning, I would highly suggest that the best way to disarm him would not be a front side single leg dive. That move has been disproven to not work. Ernie and Jack have both pressed on, and gentlemen, my highest respects to each of you. It was a pleasure knowing you. And if you like that story, definitely buy Tales from a Dirt Road, which is Dutch's autobiography and just some tales of him in the business. And I think that's a definitive Ernie Ladd case. We started with him chasing down a guy that was a bouncer with a gun at the AFL All-Star game. We're ending, before we get to these calls and these emails, with him whooping the tar out of the Briscoe brothers with a tire iron and getting shot on a single and just not going well. This is a big man. This is a big story. Obviously, like I said, one deep dive won't cover it. So if you want specific things, a certain part of Ernie's era, feel free to email pwtdive@gmail.com and I'll be happy to set up a follow-up show. But I want to start answering questions and answering calls because I know time is short and I don't want to hold everyone up. And I want to make sure we do that after our final break, and then we will come at you commercially uninterrupted with the best of Ernie Ladd.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. And as always, anytime there's information put out that is incorrect, we like to correct it because I am here for information, not misinformation. Palm, I screwed up. Mea culpa. Let the folks know what the real 411 is.
Yeah, just want to make sure everyone's clear. The fake Native American wrestler was indeed Chief Jay Strongbow, as Wahoo McDaniel was indeed a Native American.
All right. Thank you for that, and I want to make sure. Anytime you guys hear anything, like I said, check me, because I'm not the old man on the hill. The day we all stop learning is the day we all start dying. So make sure the information's right, and I'm bringing it to you 100%. Now, we're going to start with the questions. First, Nathan George wrote in. This is Nathan from Lafayette, Louisiana. Love the show. I like that you focus on one topic and break it down. I learned a lot about progress last week. I don't get to watch, but I've checked a lot of Jimmy Havoc on the YouTube. Enjoy his work, especially when he was champ. My question pertains to Ernie. Do you think there are any current African Americans in the wrestling business that could be as influential as Ernie Ladd was behind the scenes and be able to portray African Americans in a way that is unique and does not rely on stereotypes to get them over? What do you think about that, Paul?
I think, honestly, if you're looking at just kind of the biggest stage right now, I would have to point at someone like an Xavier Woods. He's someone who they've opened up and obviously said that, oh, he can go in the ring now too. Let's let him open up there. But you look at the different revenue streams he's probably bringing in, the different eyeballs, the new fans he's brought in through up, up, down, down, through his involvement with the different cons he goes to. It's someone who's expanding the umbrella. And I think that's a more than anything. Yeah, in-ring is great, on the mic is great, all that stuff is important, but what Xavier Woods does is he broadens that potential money for the WWE, and I think that people who make decisions have to respect that and have to understand that and say, hey, man, you've got your finger on some sort of pulse that we missed. What else you got?
Yeah, I think a guy like Ricochet, that's one of the first people I think of outside of the WWE, and I honestly, I'm really hopeful that when we release my interview with Darius Lockhart, Darius is Xavier 10 years ago. 20-year-old guy, young, hungry, college degree, super intelligent, super diligent about what he wants to do with the Revolutionary. I told him he was Huey Freeman if he became a pro wrestler. In terms of his mannerisms, the history he puts in, his finishers called the Asada Driver. Like, these are things where, as Darius mentions in our interview, if you don't know, you'll learn. And if you know, you'll nod your head. And that's what you need out of a pro wrestler of color. You don't need it to be the broad brush representing your race. You need it to be a person with nuance, just like some of our Caucasian brothers and sisters.
Exactly.
All right, so we got two more questions from Nathan. Other questions about the WWE Championship. Rock's the only African-American to hold the WWE title. Do you think that if Ernie Ladd came along in this era with the charisma he possessed, do you believe he would have held the championship?
It's tough because the era is so different. He is era-proof, as the tagline goes, but it is so different now. I don't know. I like to think so. I think the closest thing we're going to get to a test case might be Moose.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I've heard, he just re-upped with 3 more years for a bunch of Global Force Gold, so who knows?
And I would say I'd actually fly on the opposite side of where you are, whereas you're kind of like unsure. I'd say 100%. That interaction with Vince McMahon was all I needed to see, that if we were in the year 2017 and we had an Ernie Ladd, Vince would push that guy to a moon because he has to look up. That's one of the key things.
See, you know what? And I think you're right. I'm probably looking for someone to be an analog today. I think if Ernie Ladd happened tomorrow, I think Vince would find a way to put the belt on him.
Oh, yeah. He would be a monster. I mean,
hey, he's pushing big cats off of the side, off of his size, and cats can't talk. Imagine what he'd do with Ernie Ladd.
Yeah, imagine if you had a guy who could do a splash or a drop kick off the top rope at 6'9" and 300-plus pounds. Every time I saw that man get on the top rope, the structural integrity of the ring would feel like it's been completely compromised. So, yeah, I think Vince would lose his mind. He'd be on the Big Show. He'd be on Raw. And he'd be up there with the big dog, Roman Reigns. You got the big dog and the big cat, and both of us can't stand in the same ring. You know, all sorts of things like that.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
I've watched so much Ernie Ladd that he's become my more than Dusty. He's my go-to imitation. In fact, my good friend Travis Bryant, who I co-host the VIP portion of the East Coast Cast, had a Facebook argument which ended with me saying, "I will slap you in the general public," and him responding, "I will slap you in the presence of your mother-in-law." So Ernie's catching on in 2017. Let's see. We have one more. Nope. He's talking about a JYD question in the future. Yeah, in the future, I'd love to do JYD. And I definitely, you know, obviously I'm going to have on Palm to do other shows. most notably my dream show to have him and Bruce Mitchell on to talk about comic book characters and their analogs in pro wrestling. That's something I got to get Bruce tied down for more than Palm, because he's willing. It's just time. Bruce is a busy man, and blackmailing him or cajoling him with food and drink will be my method of bribery.
There you go. Got to know your target.
That's right. So we have our first caller, 862. Welcome to the Deep Dive with Rich and D-Palm. What is your question or comment?
It's Kyle and Rich. How are you and Palm doing?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, guys. So, as you know, I indulged in this week's homework on Tuesday, and some observations that I have of this homework would be, man, it's amazing how much heat a simple move such as an atomic drop, as seen in the Bob Backlund match that was in the playlist of matches, got in those days. You don't see anything like that today. But the thing I really would like to talk about today, which is also something you probably will not see, is Ernie Ladd's controversial use of language in his promo, such as when he would tell certain wrestlers that he would beat the living tar off of them, or several things like that.
Oh yeah, I mean, he said, "I'm gonna whoop the tar out of you, Indian, and I'm gonna pluck them feathers." You know, you're not gonna hear that on WWE television. You're not gonna hear Redbone, "Go back to Africa. Your kind and my kind never got along." It's ironic that Gino Hernandez was known as the handsome half breed, but he would call him a half breed. You know, those sorts of things. No, in 2017, they're not getting said on television.
So my question, which I kind of think you just covered, is would a big rapping near 7 foot tall African American man work today in a corporate, publicly traded WWE, or would non-African Americans be so intimidated by someone like an Ernie Ladd that he would be either shunned off to a global force or put in a New Day unicorn element and become a laughing stock in the business?
Well, I mean, that is a good question, and thank you for it. And I think the biggest thing I would say is, and I'll ask Palm to see what he thinks. I think back to when they had Bobby Lashley, and Bobby was a big dude. He was basically like Black Brock Lesnar, and they had no problem pushing him. I think with Moose, his issue was he went to TNA entirely because WWE cooled their feet because of the domestic abuse issues Quinn Ojinaka had been accused of while he was in the NFL, and the WWE wanted to kind of quote-unquote keep their nose clean. And they kind of pushed, kind of what they just did with the Ring of Honor crew that they brought into NXT after having agreed to them like 6 to 8 months ago, but then having Ring of Honor sue them for tampering and kind of have them back off. So I think, for instance, like let's say Moose. If Moose was free, Vince would jump over him, if he jump all on him if he didn't have the legal entanglement. Palm, what do you think?
I think it's interesting because we talk about guys who could take that next step to the top as an African American champion today. And it's guys who have that look, who have that image, but it's difficult because when you are a large black man in America, there are inherent negative biases that creep in from the viewer. So they've always been kind of undercut with almost a softer, goofier gimmick like Mark Henry and Sexual Chocolate or kind of the early New Day stuff. I think that the top spot is, particularly for if we're talking about a black man of stature, of size, to take that type belt, it's going to be a high wire act, a little bit different than what we've seen, because the people want to point to Jinder over on SmackDown brand right now. It's different because the image of the stereotypical Indian male isn't one of physical domination and hasn't been coded to inspire fear in America.
Right. A lot of times people go back to something like the Big Bang Theory or going to Sally to look at how Indian American men are portrayed or Pakistani American men are portrayed. And I think with Ernie, yeah, you'd have that. And, I mean, think about it. When we hear these tales from the road where wrestlers are getting drunk and chucking beer bottles at each other and signs, you almost never hear about the black wrestlers doing that.
Right.
And there's a reason, because a lot of the black wrestlers, like, if you look at the tales from the road with Dutch talks about state troopers in Mid-South territory pulling over Ernie, and as soon as they see it's Ernie, ask him about pro wrestling, and they don't even care about a ticket. That is not the 2017 landscape. Pro wrestling doesn't have the ability to shush things anymore. So you have to be doubly aware as a large African-American male that you aren't put in the he was coming towards me Black Hulk category. But yeah, that's a really good discussion point, Colin, and thank you for bringing it on. And our final caller for this evening, 623, welcome to the Deep Dive with Rich and Palm. State your name, where you're calling from, and join in.
Hey, Rich. Hey, Palm. This is Brian calling from Phoenix.
Brian, how are you? 26-year Torch VIP subscriber.
Thank you very much, Rich. And I'll make this quick. Actually, before I do that, though, I know you mentioned homework assignments, and I'm scrolling around through PW Torch and PW Torch Livecast. Where can us as listeners find, like, your list where you're going to our homework assignments? Where can we find those at?
Well, typically, I'm going to have – Wade had some issues being unwell this week, so because of that, he wasn't able to retweet them like he usually would. I usually tweet them out from my homepage on Twitter, @rich_fan, and I try to tweet them at the PW Torch Livecast and PW Torch Home Twitter feeds, so that way they can get it out to the largest audience. And then in addition, when you're looking at the show after the fact, it should be available in the notes of each episode.
Okay. Okay, cool. Thanks for letting us know. I appreciate that. So you mentioned about how long I've been a Torch subscriber, and of course I was watching wrestling before that. And, you know, reading the Stanley Weston / Pro Wrestling Illustrated Family magazine, that's really the best way for me to follow Ernie Ladd when I was a kid and then being a teenager. But really my first time seeing him was actually ironically on WWF Wrestling Challenge. Started off in 1986 when WWF, they changed their announce team around because the early superstars of wrestling had Vince McMahon and Bruno Sammartino hosting the program. And then on Wrestling Challenge, or what would have been Wrestling Challenge, was Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura. But again, Vince made a switch on it, so he put Jesse, Bruno, and himself on superstars. And then he opened up Challenge, and he had Gorilla Monsoon, Johnny Valiant, Luscious Johnny Valiant, I should say, and then he had Ernie Ladd running that team. So that's when he first started working with having like a three-person announce team. So that's my really first experience of actually seeing Ernie Ladd was ironically as a color commentator on the second, let's say on the SmackDown version of WWE back then. And, you know, he did a decent job, but then, you know, he just kind of quietly went away, and he was pretty much in the background, I guess, doing front office stuff. So I never really saw him wrestle necessarily until, you know, of course, advent of videotapes, you know, got your first VCR and you can find some old stuff. And then, of course, YouTube came along. So that was really my first experience with him. But going back to some of your homework assignments and then also looking at still going through some of the YouTube things. The thing about him, you know, I guess, of course, we didn't talk too much about work. I mean, I guess but probably anybody didn't talk too much about work rates. You know, these work rates, these matches of his weren't, you know, like catch-as-catch-can, you know, Greco-Roman great exhibition. They were pretty much stumps and kicks. And like you said, to dive off the rope was something else. But to see how he towered over all of these other wrestlers was just something else. And the other thing I'll mention about, I did watch one video where it was would have been in Florida or NWA, where they had Ernie Ladd, Big John Studd, and Ric Flair all having an interview together with, I think Gordon Sully was doing it, and that was actually pretty nice to watch that video.
Yeah, that was really cool. I also saw the one where, I think it was Ole, and they did like rapid fire, and everyone's just talking about who they hate. And it was so cool to just see all the heels line up, say their piece, get out, say their piece, get out, say their piece, get out. And then there was one where Flair had Ernie and, oh gosh, it was another big dude. I can't remember his name right now. But it was really cool to see how many of these guys that we saw on the national stage interact with each other on the territory level. Palm, what do you think?
Agree.
What do you have?
I think, speaking of work rate, I almost think that he was the platonic ideal of the precursor for that Kevin Nash big man main event style, where everything matters more, charting off their feet. It's the style that you want a big man to hit. You want a big man to reach that plateau, but sometimes the guys who don't reach there are the ones that kind of fall by the wayside. There were tons of you think of Test, like the best version of Test would have been a Kevin Nash, but he never could quite get there. But I think that for that style, Ernie Ladd was really kind of a precursor for that. It's the thing that they want to see out of Cass now, but we're not sure if we're going to get that athletic big man kind of dominate the ring Kevin Nash run. And I don't think they hurt him by having him that much time on his back doing the tag stuff with Enzo.
I agree. Hey, well, I hope you both have a real good night. And then, of course, Rich, love the program. And D-Palm, good talking to you. And I will keep listening in. Thanks a lot, guys.
Good talking to you.
Awesome. Always as a pleasure. 26-year VIP, Brian Austin, who will be co-hosting with me down the road on an episode of The Deep Dive. And our final caller will be my main man from the South, Mr. Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, is this you?
Yes, sir. How y'all doing today? Can you hear me quite well?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just riding. I was listening to you guys talk. I just only got one question. And going back to something that y'all was briefly talked about. But me looking at Ernie Ladd, looking at him, listening to the way he talked, and just looking at this, at the time that he came out, he was out on television and stuff like that. He mirrored the culture that was coming up in that time. And got me to thinking, and I heard y'all briefly talk about it, so I'm going to ask you guys this. Do you guys think that he mirrored the culture that was coming up at that time when he was on top and on television? And if so, wouldn't that be hard today to have some Ernie-like type of guy come along nowadays when the culture of today, today's kind of turn out people and split people apart.
What do you think, Paul?
Well, I think that's an interesting way to look at both culture today and the Ernie Ladd kind of reflective of the times. I think that Ernie was informed by the times in that being such an integral part of the AFL All-Star Game strike. I think that his ability to work and be trusted backstage speaks to his ability to navigate those halls while still maintaining the integrity of the things he's able to do in the ring and turn them into heel work for him. I think today it looks a little different because there is, well, as culture's gotten more advanced, everyone's kind of found what niche item appeals to them. So there really isn't a unified culture to say that represented. I think that it's interesting that we get aspects of it now. You get kind of the nerdier black culture through the New Day guys. I think that it's a bit more nuanced than it would be caricature now. I think that doing it without painting with two bars of a brush would be kind of the delicacy. I don't know if I trust the WWE writing team, but I think it'd be interesting to see them tackle it. they've been able to add a little bit of nuance to some of these characters lately, and hopefully things like the Street Profits that are coming next week won't be as bad as I think they're going to be.
Yeah, I agree. I think with Ernie, he wasn't just a product of the situation he was in and the environment he was in. He was also a pushback against it. Because remember, he was still saying the things that revolutionaries were saying, that people were protesting were saying. But the only difference is he was doing it as a pro wrestling heel, so he was supposed to get heat. Whereas, you know, Muhammad Ali saying, "No Viet Cong ever called me the N-word," set people ablaze because it's like, how dare you not respect the sanctity of troops, et cetera, et cetera. So I think if a person were to come along now, first of all, they'd have to start outside of the WWE because they won't be created within it. Second, they would have to be so over on a national level without the company that when the company brings them in, a la AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura et al., you have to bring them in as an adaptation of the original gimmick, not just something you pervert to your corporate goals to be milquetoast. What do you think about that, D?
I think if you did it today, it almost have to be heel work, man.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Darrell? What do you think about this?
I think it's kind of hard because I think he mirrored that culture that you see on old videos back in the day of the Black Panther parties, where you see people like Muhammad Ali was doing. If you look at the Black Renaissance in Harlem and stuff like that, he seemed like a regular person, even though he towered over so many guys. But what the common factor is, when somebody was looking at him on TV, you could feel like, oh man, he's somebody from down the street or from down the block. And in today's wrestling, that'll be so hard because they water it down and stuff like that. Like, I look at somebody like R-Truth, who's a caricature of a type of genre that people who I hang out with follow and live out every day. He's more of a character, a comedy act of it. Like, they're picking at it. And by using him, it's like they're picking at it. So it's kind of hard to be that way because it's so divisive, especially even more in today's society. It's so divisive that if you had a character that speaks strictly and meant to be taken seriously, and that was the point with Ernie Ladd, he was taken seriously. Everything that he said that came out of his mouth was seriously taken and not taken as a joke. And if you start trying to take that as a serious today, it'll be hard because it'd be so divisive, and then you have people coming out and be like, why are you bringing it? You're splitting us apart. And it'll bring so much stuff that they probably push it out or won't even bring it in or try to hurry up and end it quickly and bring some type of comedy or lightness to it.
What you've always got to remember, too, is that when we look back at history and how things play out, it wasn't, while we revere Ernie Ladd and say, oh, wow, of course what he was standing up for is to be celebrated and what he meant, that wasn't the consensus. It wasn't a united Black America saying that, yes, Ernie Ladd represents us. There are people saying, he's too loud, he's too divisive, why is he stirring things up? Why wouldn't they just play the game in New Orleans? The vote to not play was not unanimous.
Right.
So I think that while I think we're more aware of the divisiveness now because of social media, and which I'm not one of those social media is bad people. I think social media is great. I think that it brings the world closer together and exposes you to world views unlike your own and makes you a better person. But I also think that it magnifies some of the things that have for so long been quieted. So the divisiveness, while be louder, and I think that you're correct in saying that today's WWE wouldn't court it, I think that if they did want to, it wouldn't be unheard of in the industry.
Yeah. And I think, Darrell, to your point, if you get a chance, when Wade puts up my interview with Darius Lockhart, what you're looking for, he provides. Now, he's a little bit on the smaller side. He's more of a Cedric Alexander body type, but he is what you're talking about. He is talking about – he is a heel in North Carolina that wrestles in West Virginia, that wrestles all over the South with Black Lives Matter on his trunks. He's a person that comes out for the respectability politics crowd with an afro and a pick in his hair. He, like I mentioned before, his finishers, the Asada Lock, Pantherplex, Revolutionary Knees. You know, he has things including, you know, I don't want to give away some of the stuff that we had in the interview, but CWF Mid-Atlantic, their titles have every state in the Mid-Atlantic territory. And some of those states have the stars and bars on them. And Darius, in his interview, gets into what he would do with the belt should he ever win a CWF singles or tag title. So those are the sorts of deep things in terms of cultural and racial sensitivity that he's handling. And should he make it to a WWE roster, I think he would be sophisticated enough to do that without being caricature. Or, you know, we didn't even talk about the fact that a guy like Ernie. Ernie used the big word. He used Uncle Tom several times when he talked about other black wrestlers. And the nuclear weapon, short of using the N-word, of saying that to another black person. So I think we have to accept, like Palm said, there's going to be some resistance, but there's also going to be an opportunity for him to, whomever that next Ernie Ladd is, flourish because of the undercurrents of the society in which we live. We've gone Broadway, Palm. Before we get out of here, talk about what you do at Unanimous Decision. Talk about the MTR Network, how people can join, how people can get a hold of you, and just tell them about all the awesome stuff you do that makes this world a better place.
Not about a better place, but hopefully a little bit funnier. I am the host of the Unanimous Decision podcast. It's a sports podcast that occurs once a week over on the MTR Network. The MTR Network provides a unique take on the world of politics, games, video games, television and movies, and more. We have a premium network that covers even more topics, but my show is a weekly look at the world of sports. I have Rich on more than occasionally, talk a little pro wrestling. Coming up, we have a great promo happening. It's called Podcast Week. Normally, it's a weekly show, but because I hate myself, I'm doing 5 shows in 5 days. We're going to be dropping a show every day of the week of the 14th through the 18th. It'll culminate with a supersized SummerSlam preview of dropping on Friday the 18th with some voices I think you'll recognize from the PW Torch Livecast.
And you guys definitely take advantage of it. Check out UD Pod, not just when I'm on it. Check it out when I'm not. I think it's funnier when I'm not, and I think the subjects are awesome. And the MTR Network. I think Chris and all of the folks over at MTR do an awesome job, not just representing black podcasters, but podcasting in general. He is a professional. The staff is equally professional. You heard Palm talk with me today. He didn't get that way coming out of the box. This guy's been working. He's been working hard first as a listener, then being a contributor, and kind of the same thing I did here at the Torch. And cream rises to the top, and it's reflected in what he's doing now at UD Pod. So
just I working the territory, brother, trying to make a name for myself. You guys can follow me on Twitter at dpalm66, D-P-A-L-M-66.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank Palm for being on. He's going to be on in the future for other shows. I want to thank you guys for listening. This has been a little bit longer than normal, but I think it was worth it. Before I go, make sure you do my weekly challenge. Dive into something you haven't done before. Palm and I are examples of that. You just take that breath, you dive in, and you see what happens from there. You never know what good can come from challenging yourself. As always, it's a pleasure working and listening with you guys. Next week, we're talking G1 Climax Final. If you haven't seen it today, you need to see it. And when you get ready to see it, come on back next week. Me and Sean Radican are going to talk about the finals. We're going to talk about the importance of the final. And we're going to talk a little general New Japan ins and outs. You guys have been great. Here's our outro. Take care. And we'll be diving with you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject. and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. Now it's-